Change starts and stops with a WTF moment. The first is, what the fuck am I doing? We finally wake up to the reality that our life is not what we want it to be. The denial is done. We have to ask ourselves the hard questions. If we never have that moment, nothing changes. The next WTF is walking towards fear. If you aren't willing to find your growth edges and take steps in a new and likely scary direction, again, nothing changes. This podcast is a space to explore open and honest conversations around creating change in our personal worlds, which honestly has become my favorite adventure yet. Thanks for following along.
I am so excited for our guest today. You guys are in for a treat. So this is someone that I actually met through a Facebook page, a Facebook group, should I say. We both went to the same coaching school, which was the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching. Twist my tongue every time I try to say it out loud. But today I have me Tiffany Green, who we connected briefly on a post I had put out there. And everything about Tiffany's energy to me was just so aligned with how I see the world. She is walking service. She lives in such integrity with the things that she talks with clients about that it really invited me to step up in my own life where I was, you know, maybe talking about something, but not really walking the walk. So we'll talk all about energy leadership and what Tiffany does and how she's landed here. But with that, Tiffany, welcome.
Christine, I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited to just continue our conversation because I think that the first time we talked, there was something really deep that happened in terms of just seeing your heart and seeing the way that you want to show up in the world in terms of service and integrity and authenticity. And I loved your energy from the very first time that we talked. So I'm so happy to have the chance to continue the dialogue.
Me too. And to not just selfishly to have you here, but for you to be able to share a bit more widely some of your story, right? We're sitting here today and you've had things happen in the past and you have places that you're headed in the future. And I've started doing this actually where, you know, I know a bit of your story and I find it to be actually more powerful that I'll invite you to kind of set the stage for us of how you landed where you are right now. What feels important for you to share?
Sure. Well, I want to start with right after I met you, I had a conversation with my coach and I was buzzing. I was carrying the energy from our session into my session with our coach. And I was talking to him about the ways in which, you know, our conversation spoke loud and clear, but I was also, you know, just intrigued with how you named your podcast. And I brought it up a couple of times and he paused to say, like, Tiffany, your focus on WTF is telling me something. There's something about the way that Christina has named her podcast that is speaking really loudly to you. And it's not just that you like to swear. there's something deeper here. And he was right. He picked up on the fact that I felt a really, really deep connection to the work that you want to do in terms of getting people to not only sit with discomfort, but to move towards the thing that really freaks them out because they want it for themselves, because there's a way in which their soul, their body, their heart, their mind knows that they want this experience for themselves and something's keeping them stuck. And so my coach, Joshua Fields, was absolutely right that I resonated with it because I had lived too much of my life in the shadow of fear. Mm-hmm. And I knew that from the point of having figured that out, that I didn't want to stay stuck in that. And so I want to start with that story because it's my way of saying you've already inspired me in many different ways, right? Like I'm so excited that we're talking about Living Service this evening, the book that we're reading together. But that revelation about sort of what those three letters represented in my own life was just a really powerful awakening.
I had chills like three times as you were sharing that. And I'm actually curious, right? Because clearly that landed somewhere where there was some part of you that was like, I don't have language for it yet, but this feels important, right? And I think we've all had that experience of like, I don't understand what's happening, but this is, yeah, like awakening something there. So when you look back on your life up until this point, what are some of the big kind of pivotal moments where you saw that fear previously was really holding you back?
Yeah. So I actually start to sort of mentally catalog those, and there was quite a lot of them. I'm a huge fan of Glennon Doyle, the book Untamed, activist, author, came into a lot of self-awareness through her own recovery. She was an addict, struggled with bulimia and body image, figured out her sexuality during a heterosexual marriage, realized that she was actually gay. Incredible beauty in her story. But one of the things that really, really resonated is all the ways in which women are told to play small, to, you know, show up in a world in a way which allows us to fit the narrative or be convenient because we're not, you know, loud about our, you know, the things that really move us or the ways in which we see inequity or inequality, or, you know, to sort of get really involved in the fight for justice on whatever issue, you know, it is that resonates with you. And so that whole narrative just resonated at a place that was beyond deep, like just in my bones. I deeply, deeply understood what it was that she was saying about fit in. And I was never really someone who felt like she did fit in. Deep, deep feeler, lot of emotion that scared me for a good, you know, part of my life. And so I think that so much of the fear was stepping out of the people pleasing, was stepping out of the ways in which I was supposed to show up for other people, you know, for my community, my teachers, my boyfriends, my, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And coming into an awareness through her work that I didn't want to play small anymore. I didn't want to continue to put my needs behind the needs of everybody else or the expectations of everybody else. And that has shown up now, you know, and that awakening happened for me in my 40s. I'd say it was around 40 when I started to, you know, really lean into her work and started to find my own voice in a lot of different ways.
Okay, I really want to follow this because we actually just talked about before recording, you had just listened to the Waiting to Creating episode I put out the other day.
I did.
Yeah. And I'm also a very deep feeler, like that kind of narrative of you shouldn't be feeling this much started for me quite young as well. So when you say that you were almost scared of your own emotionality, I guess, like the intensity of those emotions, how did that show up for you? Like, what did that look like?
Well, I don't think that I had the language for it that I do now. Sure. So it was always. This sense of feeling like I was in a part of my life that was ahead of where I was from an age perspective. So like at 10, I felt like I was carrying, you know, issues that you'd have later in the teens. In my teens, I felt like I attached to the next generation. So there was always this sense that I had sort of grown up too quickly, that And it wasn't from, you know, childhood trauma. It was just always a sense of like being very, very aware of the world. And from a very early age, recognizing that there was a lot of hurt in the world. I remember being in middle school and it would hurt my heart when someone had to sit at the lunch table alone. And I didn't have the social skills to recognize that it was totally okay to leave my own group of friends to embrace somebody. So I used to sit not only with their pain, like that sense of like that person feels isolated and I don't know how to help them, but also the guilt that I didn't do anything about it. So, you know, these are complex feelings for, you know, for someone who was in middle school to feel so connected to somebody else's pain in that way. And so I just didn't have a way of making sense of how much emotion I felt about the hurt that I knew existed. And it was also a paradox because I had a very happy childhood. I had a lot of psychological safety in my own home. I had, you know, a beautiful example of what marriage should be. My dad passed in July of last year, but their marriage was one that was just infinitely beautiful. Not to say that they didn't have conflict or, you know, that they didn't have periods of their marriage that they went through some really hard things. They certainly did. But I had a really strong example of love and trust and security. But yet at the same time, I just seemed to be aware that the world was a scary place.
I love that you just shared that. I got the feeling as you were talking kind of between the words that just like this old soul in you, right? And you were saying, you know, these are difficult things to navigate as a middle schooler, but I'm going to challenge that. That's just hard to navigate as an adult, right?
Fair.
Never mind being small and trying to find language for it, right? We can have this conversation now as two intellectual humans, but when we're small and it is just emotion, emotion can be scary. We don't even know what we're kind of hiding from. So knowing that that was previously something you've navigated with kind of difficulty, how has your relationship with kind of your emotions changed over time?
Yeah, phenomenal question. I love that I get to experience your coaching through this as well. Right? So I have definitely had a shift, you know, in, I guess, let me call it midlife, where I'm no longer afraid of whatever it is that comes up, whether that's sitting with the deepest parts of my grief, sitting with a sense of this doesn't honor my values, sitting with there's a lot of pain in the world that, you know, I don't know how to resolve, but I know how to be the change that I want to see. I can, you know, I can start to use my voice to express, you know, that there's other ways of, you know, there's other ways of protecting women's rights. There's other ways of, you know, making sure that kids are safe from guns at school. There's other ways of including everybody in the conversation. There's other ways of inviting in people that we haven't had experiences up to this point in our life that offer beautiful perspectives. And sometimes fear is what gets in the way. And so I've become sort of an accidental activist in certain senses, where that displeasure of sort of seeing these things that hurt me, right, that create hurt in the world, that create pain in the world, that that sort of support a tearing apart instead of a building back together, and sort of seeing each other as humans and really honoring the fact that we are 99.9% the same DNA across all of us. It's starting to, you know, when that pain sets in and when the emotion becomes uncomfortable, is to think about how to lean into it instead of how to lean out of it, how to sit with it, but then also, you know, how to allow it to point the way forward in terms of, you know, there's choice here, Tiffany. And you're also modeling something for your children. You know, if they see you fall apart at the news because something that's happened in the news is so deeply upsetting for you, they can also see you use your art, use your voice, use your activism to paint a different picture of the way that you hope the future will be. And so I've tried to do that with the emotion, is just one, recognize, okay, there's a reason I'm having it. And it's because either I'm excited, I'm hurt, I'm inspired, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm resentful, I'm passionate. And whatever those emotions are, to know that they are pointing the way forward and that I don't have to stuff them. I don't have to do what society, you know, has conditioned me to do, which is to explain them away or, you know, whatever those messages were. I have started to ask myself, what do you want to do with the pain, or what do you want to do with the excitement? And I go back to the name of your podcast. I think that's where the WTF speaks to me, Christina, is it's that idea that leaning into that emotion is the way that I want to live my life, the way that I want to run my business, the way that I want to be a mother and a friend and a coach. And so there was just something really, really powerful about those three letters.
And the word that caught my attention when you were just sharing that, right, was I don't want to have to explain the emotions away. I myself have struggled with that so much in the past. And I talked with clients about that. I talk with people in the world about it, right? That here's this emotion that comes up and we have to like rationalize it and justify it and share with people what's going on. And the other option is to actually just feel it, right? Like, that's interesting. What is that? What is that feeling that I'm experiencing right now? And that can be really difficult. I'm actually curious. I know kind of my answer for this, but do you have certain emotions that you find both working within yourself and with, you know, clients in the world that are harder to feel than other emotions? Some feel like they're easy and some feel like they're more challenging.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Good one. So I'll start with the ones that are easy, which is the bittersweet. And the bittersweet is the idea that joy and pain exist in the same place, right? And, you know, there may be a point, you know, during our time together where I can say a little bit more about how I experienced that in my grief, but, you know, those emotions feel very easy to access for me because of the deep feeling. Even when I was just listening to your episode, waiting to creating, I don't think we were 30 seconds in when I was crying, you know? And of course, part of that was responding to your vulnerability, your pain, because that's what deep feelers do, right? Is we're familiar with our own pain, but we also attach the pain of others. And so I was feeling that deeply because of the openness and the way in which you were expressing, you know, this idea that nothing's promised and we need to celebrate what's beautiful about our lives and our relationships, because they're not promised. And so I connected very, very quickly and very deeply to that, right? And so I think that I see pain easily. I feel pain easily. I also feel that life is immensely beautiful. My favorite word in the English language is not even a word. It's brutiful. The combination of beautiful and brutal, brutal and beautiful. That's from Glennon Doyle. I think it's probably the most beautiful word that exists, even though it's not really a word. And it's so perfectly captured how I feel about the world, like this terrifying place that's also infinitely beautiful. Very, very quick detour. I'll come back to your question, but quick detour as I was listening to someone who was talking about the experience of being alive, right? With all of its, you know, nuance in terms of the range of human emotions, that if let's just say that we were not humans, we were some other species, and somebody came to us and said, you're going to get to go to Earth for however long an average human lifetime is. But if you go, if you accept this journey, you are going to have to feel all of the range of human emotions, all of them. And some of them will bring you to your knees and you'll think that you can't move on. And other emotions will be so beyond beautiful that you can't even imagine that your heart will be this full. But again, you're going to feel it all. You're not going to get to, like, you know, stay in the happy zone. Are you in? Right. for me, sign me up, right? Sign me up. I want that experience. And I want it to be messy and I want it to be vulnerable and I want to feel all of the range of human emotions. And so that's just part of living, right? Part of living includes days that we feel like we're dying, days that we feel so much pain that we don't know if we can move forward. It's just part of being here. And so again, if I were that other species, I would say, give me that human experience. So those are the ones that are easy for me to feel. I think the ones that are harder for me to feel are where I don't have a roadmap for, you know, it's something new. It's something scary. Like I feel like there's layers of expectations about how I'm supposed to be. And maybe those are around a part of my identity that surprises me, or maybe those are around some experience that I want, but I'm too scared to have. So for example, I'm a photographer, and photography is the one place in my life where I've had absolutely no fear. And I had to think about why that was. And it was because I discovered it completely by accident and nobody expected anything of me from it. And if I took a bad shot, I'd take it again. And I was having too much fun to be scared. I just knew that I loved holding the lens piece to my eye. I loved the weight of the camera. I loved the sound of the shutter. Like all of those things were so infinitely beautiful that I just wasn't scared to fail. And as a result, I've had a lot of success in photography. I've been able to fill myself up in that way. And it came from a place of having no expectation. And it came from a place of just being curious about what could I create here? What's another way to see the shot? Like, where's a different place I could stand? What's two images that I could combine to create something new? And so I think that it's really expectation. I know expectation is not a feeling, but it's the feeling that comes from expectation that I have a lot of difficulty with. And I haven't navigated my way out of that yet.
I'm sure you are the only one on planet Earth that struggles with that one, Tiffany.
The only one. I knew I was unique, Christina.
I love it. And gosh, there was so much there, right? I would say, you know, you kept saying like, this is just part of the human experience. Like, this is what we get to experience, like this fullness, this brutalness of the world. And I'm going to say, that's not true. Like, it does not have to be that way. I know plenty of people that numb out everything, right? Mm. It's not just the hard parts, but it's the good parts too. I remember kind of at the beginning of my journey, a coach that I was working with kind of helped me understand that when we block out the difficult emotions, the things you were just talking about that are hard to feel, we also lose access to the higher emotions. Like you can feel as deeply as you can, but like there's a duality there. So if you can feel bliss and joy, you're going to feel, you know, despair and grief and helplessness. There's just this kind of back and forth seesaw effect of it. And learning how to feel those things can be really kind of powerful. And again, plenty of people numb out, whether it's with alcohol or shopping or sex or scrolling on devices now, right? It's huge.
Sure, sure.
Doom scroll. But what's interesting is I recently started playing with this kind of differential, this distinction. So I'll ask you just to like bat it around with me here. The difference between being fearless and being brave.
Wow. Let me ask you, what comes up for you in terms of the space between those two?
Yeah, so in my mind, right, when we're fearless, as you were just talking about with photography, like, fear doesn't exist there for me. And you know, there's a different kind of direction we can take that too. And because of that, I don't want to say there's no challenge, but at the same time, there's nothing really to overcome. if fear doesn't exist, it's just, I'm creating and that's it. Whereas with bravery, right, or courage, I guess we could kind of use those interchangeably. It feels like, there's actually a bit of a battle here. Like, what part of me is going to win? Is it the part that's fearful? Or is it the part that's, you know, curious and intrigued and committed to the thing on the other side of the current obstacle being something I'm afraid of? That's kind of how I start thinking about it.
Okay. I love that reflection. So what I heard in that space was also intention, right? Because if there is an absence of fear, you aren't needing to invest in how to overcome it, right? It's just, it doesn't exist. But when there is a fear, when you know that something scares you or where you feel less equipped to really go towards it, it's a process of being very aware of our mind, right? Our mind will either help us or hurt us in that situation. It will enable, you know, us to move beyond it, or it will keep us stuck. It can do both of those things, as we know. And, you know, it's actually a beautiful place to sort of bring in energy leadership in terms of, you know, our mirror, the mirror that we hold up about our awareness, can keep us at level one, which is victim, where we don't feel like we have agency or control, or that, you know, we're not really empowered to change the situation. We feel like it is what it is, and we can stay stuck, or we can move into levels of energy which allow us to see our situation with different lenses. One of the things I love about photography and energy leadership is there's so many parallels. Literally, they both involve lenses, right? The lenses that we look at our lives.
Yeah.
And
to jump in quickly, let's talk about, before we keep going, because I love this concept. And again, you are the energy leadership queen. How would you define that for someone who has no idea what you're talking about?
Okay. Energy leadership in general. Okay. Thank you. So energy leadership is a way in which we view the world, and it is the mirror that we hold up against our consciousness so that we're able to better understand the ability to use choice in our lives. So when we have a situation, we are at choice in how we want to integrate that situation into our understanding of it, right? So there's always the choice to accept or to come at it with conflict, to ignore, to deny, to, as you said, to numb it away, or to lean into it even when, you know, it's something that may scare us to death or be really uncomfortable, to use some of the higher levels of energy to figure out how we can embrace a different way of viewing it that allows us to access deeper fulfillment, deeper satisfaction. And so it really is a consciousness model. I prefer the word self-awareness because I like to sort of keep energy leadership in speak that's accessible. And so it's just the way in which we understand ourselves. But the other part of energy leadership that's really important to understand is the lenses that we use come from our lived experiences up until that point in our life. So everyone that we meet, all of the experiences that we've had, good, bad, traumatic, inspiring, they all shape these lenses for us. And so it's a process of understanding that the world has shaped us, and the world, you know, shapes the way that we view our situations. So these levels of energy are ways that we can employ choice over fear. Is let's stick with fear. And so we can look at fear as something that is inevitable and also a really powerful motivator, and listen to what it's telling us about a situation. If we're fearful of it, perhaps it might mean that we haven't experienced it before, but it could also mean that we want it, right? There's a connection to motivation. It's connection to the sense of having overcome it, because you never, ever, ever are standing in your own power more than when you've done the thing that freaks you out the most. I love your, okay. Well, the listeners can't see this, but Christina is like nodding like really, really vigorously right now. And I just spilled my tea all over myself.
I'm like, yes, Tiffany, keep going, keep going.
It was so fun to see your face there. I want to pause and have you integrate what I've just said, but that we both feel deeply.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I love that you use the analogy of lenses through photography. So I use this sometimes with clients when I talk about energy leadership. It's like, if I have 7 pairs of glasses in front of me, mm-hmm. right? I can put on a pair of glasses, and let's say the second pair of glasses, which is the second level of energy leadership, is anger. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking through these glasses of anger into the world. I'm going to see anger everywhere.
That's right.
Right. And if I choose my, you know, 5th set of glasses, which is the lens of opportunity, I'm going to put those on my face and I will find opportunity wherever I'm looking. Mm-hmm. So seeing the duality there and with photography is really such a cool way to look at it, because energy leadership is helping people to have language for like, how am I seeing the world right now? Is it useful? Is it not? And where does fear kind of come into play? And that's where you started getting spicy too, being like, there's nothing better than doing what you don't think you can do. It's such a cool, I wish I had a word for that. Maybe it's accomplishment, I don't know. But feeling that sense of, I can't believe I was able to do that thing, right? And because we try to do these things, I actually want, if you're open to it, kind of follow this that you had started talking about earlier, right? With photography, there's no fear and there's no failure. Like I'll take another, you know, click, I'll frame a new shot, I'll do something different. And I see where fear comes in my personal experience as well, is not so much failing at anything, right? We all fail at stuff all the time. Mm. It's when other people watch us fail at something, right? Mm. Public failure or being perceived as a failure is very different kind of than the act of failing itself.
Yes. 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 And that resonates, you know, back to what I talked about earlier in terms of expectation, that it was the expectation of other people that always kept me feeling stuck, that always kept me feeling like I wasn't necessarily able to honor the loudest voice inside of me. And, you know, we didn't talk about one of the ways that I walked towards fear, but just a year ago was when I left corporate America after 25 years to start my business. And, you know, everyone described that move as, you know, bold. And I never thought of it as bold. For me, it was necessary. It was, I needed to remove myself from the grips of the emotion that it was holding me in. Not because it wasn't a wonderful place to work, not because I didn't have amazing colleagues or incredible learning experiences, but the way in which I was working was no longer healthy. And so it was necessary for me to choose a different path. But my decision to get there took 1 therapy, 2-3 years. I took a lot of time to make that decision. And a lot of it was not about what I knew that I wanted, but what I was worried about all the other things and people and the judgment that I might face to leave, you know, the security that I had and a career that I had invested 25 years in. That was how long I was in my HR job. And so, you know, going back to failing, there was no part of me that had felt that I had failed. That thought didn't even cross my mind. I knew that I had accomplished a lot. I was proud of what I had done, but I just knew that I couldn't continue to do it any longer. And it was that very public view that just kept me, you know, looking to other people for advice. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And what you learn is that when you're doing that, right, when you're polling people, like, let's do a survey monkey on what Tiffany's life should look like now, right? Like, you know, that's where I was, like seeking from other people. Nobody else had that answer. And the thing is, I had it for a long time. I was just really fearful.
So that's what's interesting. When you were saying, you know, it's hard to listen to the loudest voice in your head, you know, and this is just my experience of it. I'm sure it can be different for different people, but I found the voice that I need to listen to is actually the quiet one. The loud one is always the voice of reason, right? In the same way that you were explaining away emotions, almost explaining away our choices, right? And then getting super quiet and like, oh shoot, when I'm really paying attention here, like, oh, it's that really quiet voice in the back of the room that's just whispering, like almost doesn't even want me to hear it. But now that I've heard it, I can't unhear it, right? So I'm curious now, like, do you see your decision to leave as both necessary and bold?
Yeah, I suppose in hindsight, it was bold. I may have told you this story the first time that we talked, but one morning I woke up and I had a broken blood vessel in my eye and there was no part of the white of my eye that was visible. I had looked like an alien. And to me, that was my body's way of putting up a stop sign. And it was quite, you know, it even looked like a stop sign. It was just this like glaring red thing that was in the middle of my face that was like, this was my body's way of saying, you need to exit now. So was it bold? Yes. You know, I certainly did leave a lot of security behind. I left a community behind. I've worked really hard to, you know, keep that community intact through, you know, just continuing to cultivate those relationships and those friendships. And actually when you leave a place, what's really cool is you get to experience those people in a different way. You know, for example, you know, the team, that I had built at my former company, those people are still in my lives and we experience each other as friends versus coworkers. And that's a really cool shift. So I got so excited about what we were talking about that I can't remember your original question.
To see if you saw it as both bold and necessary.
Oh, bold, right, yes. So yes, it was. So leaving was bold. And, you know, as anyone who starts a new business knows, there's a lot of skills that you don't necessarily have as, so leadership is very important. Self-leadership is very important, but the skills of building a business are not one and the same as the skills that I needed as my HR executive role. It's not like a one for one. Of course, I'm still using a lot of the leadership skills that I built over that career. But like the sales side of things and you know, time management and sort of self-motivation and how you structure your time, because there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more fluidity there. That's scary at first. Actually, it's still scary for me. I'm only a year in at this point and still figuring things out and still a little bit fearful. But I would say that, you know, conversations like these and spaces like these really, one, help me feel less alone in that, but also provide me with the inspiration to know that this work is so freaking beautiful. It is so deeply meaningful that whenever I get to do it, I just feel so incredibly joyful that there's a parallel with photography that it's like, I don't know that I can fail because I've already filled my heart so much just to find this work, just to find my community, to find, you know, people like you. And I see, I see like the service component that you're bringing to your coaching work, which is also, you know, a way that I resonate. So, so yes, it was bold and yes, I'm still scared, but I love it.
Yeah, and that's the piece, right? Going back to fearless versus brave, or you could say bold, right? Like, yes, and it is bold and I'm scared and I'm terrified. And what's fun for me, I have really started to see sometimes when I feel fearful, it's actually just confusing emotions in my personal body. speaking for, you know, nobody else, sometimes I can mistake being afraid for being excited.
Yes. And our bodies don't know the difference between those two. They feel the same way, right? I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was just with someone who teaches public speaking and was talking about how our bodies experience scared and excited in a very, very similar manner. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was so telling, right? That I could be sweating because I'm excited, or I could be sweating because I'm nervous, but my body doesn't know. And so it's not a very far bridge to cross, to take our nervousness or our anxiety to a place of, maybe my body is signaling to me that I really want this experience for myself. So I love what you just reflected there.
Yeah. So with that, right, a lot of this is kind of forward motion too. So I'm curious, right? We know that you've been in corporate America. You have made the bold and necessary decision, right, to walk away from that. And now you're doing what you love. You have challenged that world of expectations from others, right? Sitting with like the deepness and the bigness of the feelings that can also be kind of terrifying. But where you are now, like, what does your future look like? What are you working to create?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned to you, I have such a deep love for this work. And the year in review has been by far the one in which I've had the most learning about myself. So I love the one-on-one coaching space. And that's really where I intend to stay for a very, very long time. I love career coaching because I find it just so intriguing to learn what motivates people, you know, so deeply that they choose it for their work, right? So our values, how our values align to our work is a topic of like incredible curiosity and fascination and meaning for me to really help people create that alignment in their lives. A lot of times when we become frustrated with our work, or we become disillusioned, or we feel like we're not, you know, in a place that's filling us up, it's often because those values have gotten out of alignment. And sometimes that's because our values change, right? Like our values at age 20 are not the same as our values at 50 or 70. It's a process of going through life and, you know, sort of redefining how it is that we want to experience it. And that comes through our values. And so I want to continue to, you know, to find the opportunity to partner with people in a creative process that really allows them to lean into work that they love. And I've seen the power of that in my coaching business, the way in which folks recognize, okay, these are the things that I want to honor, you know, beyond all else in my work. And the rest falls into place. Like if we start with the values work, we start with your who, right? So that's from our coaching school. It's this idea of, you know, who you are at your core, what your core values are, what your beliefs around, you know, how are you best in service to yourself? Who are you is not, you know, your title. It's not who you are on your business card. It's really about who you are in your soul, in your heart, in your mind. And so a process of developing a lot of that begins the work of stepping into a profession, an occupation, and work that feels like really anabolic, which is the way that we describe passion and creativity and fulfillment, the building up process. It's an energy that gets created when we're doing something that is in alignment with our who.
Yeah, and that definitely does not always mean easy, right? There's plenty of obstacles that come with it. It's just, what are the obstacles I'm excited about, right? Yeah. And knowing that you said this last year has had some of the biggest growth and lessons that are available for you personally, I'm curious if you kind of have them accessible. Definitely no pressure if not. But what would you say were like your top two either lessons or learnings from last year for you?
Yeah. So I had mentioned before, you know, grief, that grief has really characterized my last year. My father was an incredible, incredible human. He was a dentist by trade, but an artist at his core, and created magnificent pieces of art in gardens and waterfalls, working with natural elements. He was not a religious man, but deeply, deeply spiritual, and felt very connected to humanity, very connected to nature, very connected to animals. And really, you know, what defined his who was love, was a deep, deep love for being alive. And when we knew that he was going to pass, and he had not been well for a long time, but we learned only 2 weeks before he died that he had pancreatic cancer, because his other conditions made it so that he was never a candidate for surgery. So they had stopped scanning his body. So we knew that he was in really serious decline, but we didn't know that it was pancreatic cancer. And so when we learned that we only had a very short time with him, he said to me, Tiffany, I know how hard my death is going to be for you. And that is why I need you to honor me by living. And I need you to honor me by really living fully and giving voice to all the things that are meaningful to you, and continuing to create your art and love your children and your family the way that you do, you know, and being close to mom and Kim and my sister, and just bring all of you, instead of wallowing in my grief, I need you to celebrate the love that we've had for the years that we've been together. And I was very fortunate to have him for my first 47 years of life, which is a long, you know, I recognize there are some people that don't have their parents nearly that long. So I do consider that a blessing, but he asked me to honor him by living. And I think that was another thing that about, you know, how you've named your podcast, that's what he would have told me. He would have said, like, walk into it. Like, it scares you, go do it, go take it, go, you know, go after it. And so there was something about that was just like my dad's voice.
What a beautiful gift to you.
It was.
Sounds like your dad is a really special man.
Yeah.
And to see you have that ripple now in the world of you're doing it, right? You have made the bold and necessary choices so far, and there's no doubt in my mind you will continue to make those for yourself. That's really beautiful.
Yeah. It was a lesson of gratitude, right? Like, he reminded me, celebrate all that we have as a family. That love doesn't die, that love won't leave. And that really is, you know, going back to level 7 on the energy leadership, which is a place of pure passion and unconditional love, where winning and losing are illusions, where we are nothing and everything. I have been level 7 in my grief, because even though my dad's not still on this earth, I feel him every day and in every way. And I am able to access him almost as if he was here. I know what he'd say about a certain situation. And so, you know, one of the reasons that energy leadership holds so much meaning is I've been able to do so much with how to make sense of my grief from it. And it's a really, really beautiful way to experience loss, right? To recognize that in loss, there's also love. Loss and love are one and the same. Grief and love are one and the same. And so that's really the biggest thing that I've taken away. And I remember the thing that he said to me, and it was a couple days before he died. We were all together, and, you know, we were with him, and we were even able to watch Cheers reruns, and we watched his favorite documentary, which is a documentary called The Octopus Teacher. It's an incredible story. I see you've seen it. Okay. And so he said to me, Tiffany, I want to write a book. And I said, what do you want to write, Dad? And he said, I want to write a book called A Great Way to Die. My sister and I were just floored. We were just floored. He was in tremendous pain. Pancreatic cancer is a terrible, terrible disease. But he was still so present. He was so present and so lucid about the fact that his life was joyful and even his death was joyful. And I thought, like, who looks at death that way? But it was my dad that did. And I knew that there was so much to learn from that about his own fearlessness. He even said, I asked him, are you scared, Dad? And he said, I'm not because I've experienced profound love. I've had everything that I could want in this life. I have all of you guys. I'm not scared. And so that is, you know, again, I go back to thinking about walking towards fear. Like he was brave and he was fearless, right? And he asked us to be the same.
And I see that you are that. You are living that. And as an example of what's possible, you're creating not just ripples, but waves all over the place.
Thank you, Christina. That's so beautiful. And I thank you for that because, you know, at first when I spoke to you, I had this idea in my mind that, you know, the big adventure was, of course, it lives in the form of some of the adventures that you've had for yourself, right? Like I think about the Pacific Crest Trail as like, that is something that is just so inspiring to me. And then some of your other guests have done amazing things and traveled the world and had such incredible experiences. And there was a very small part of me that I was like, she wants me on her podcast. Of course, that was the inner critic talking, but I was defining, you know, overcoming fear in a narrative that of course was way too narrow. And so I want to thank you for giving me that gift of recognizing that I've had my own PCT, right? You even said that you said we all have our own PCT. I remember when I first talked to you and you're right. And so I just want to say truly thank you for seeing me honoring my PCT and also just the way in which you're showing up in the coaching space to remind all of us of the gift and opportunity of service and for creating community. So, you know, you are building community in every interaction. I've seen your post and I've listened to your podcasts. I see the way that you show up for other coaches and I want to expand on that. I want to be part of that. And I want to continue to build on that, you know, with you and also in my own practice. So thank you for being a beautiful model of coaching and for including me in this community that you're building.
Thank you for that, Tiffany. And truly, right? Like that is why I've created a podcast where I talk to, and it's not even talking down to, right? Ordinary people that have extraordinary stories. Mm. Like, sure, I walked across the country. Great. But guess what? I have not sat with my own dying father and had a journey and an adventure into what it means to be so deeply loved by that person and to share that and continue moving forward. Right? That's an adventure I have not had that you've had and have now shared with other people, right? Someone listening to this podcast may be going through the end of life for a parent right now, or know that it's coming because the only certainty we have here, unfortunately, is that we're not here forever. Right. And I've just learned so much from you about that process and how to experience that with love. And of course, grief lives there too. And so thank you for sharing that part of your journey because it's so valuable for other people to experience, to hear, and to see what's possible, even amidst kind of some of the bumpy seas, the chaos that happens in life too.
Sure. Sure.
And, you know, as we're wrapping up towards the end here, I this is an awesome spot to open up and say, this is now where you have the opportunity actually to ask something of my audience, right?
Awesome.
So I'm curious if you've had some time to think about that and if you have something you're ready to invite them into.
Yeah, no. So thank you for that opportunity. And I did give that some thought. So next week is actually International Coaching Week, May 8th through 14th. And it's an opportunity for people to experience coaching that haven't been coached before, and to see the power and the potential of partnering with someone in thought in a safe space in a way that really invites them to explore thoughts and feelings in a way that they may have and not before. And then to sort of see what examining those can really mean in terms of mindset and also examining choice, right? Because we sometimes we get locked into thinking about our situations as unfixable or unsolvable or static. And of course, the reality is that there's a lot of opportunity for us to use choice over how we view ourselves, how we view our situations. And that really is where the power of coaching lives. So I am very happy to talk to anyone who's in a life transition or struggling with a career, whether that's thinking that there's some other work that's out there for them, or just feeling stuck in their career and, you know, wanting to explore around what are the other possibilities. So I would invite anyone who wants to take me up on that offer. I am offering a free session, no fee, no obligation, just an opportunity to experience what it means to have a powerful thought partner and to experience coaching during next week. So anyone who's interested in that can get in touch with me, Tiffany@greencareercoach.com. And I want to thank you again for opening up that opportunity.
Amazing. I didn't even know that it was International Coach Week next week. So I just learned something new. Like, I can play with that too. But yes. I will make sure that your information is in the notes so people can have that. And you know, the beauty of this work in this space is that the boldness of career looks different for people too, right? Mm-hmm. I see this a lot. People have an idea and think they have to go like full-time in it or like jump off the cliff with like no plans. Like, oh, nope, that's not necessarily what anyone's encouraging you to do right now. But to have a conversation and honor yourself to say, hey, here's my career. Either there's more available to me within the career I'm already in, or like, I'm kind of terrified to admit that I think I might want to do something different. Yes. Tiffany is so passionate about the career space that it was actually quite funny when we first connected. I think I was like, great, you can help them figure out what they want to do, and then I can help get them there. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you said, I don't love the career exploration piece.
Right. I'm more like, once you have that figured out, like I can absolutely get you to that space. Yeah. The exploration piece. I'm like, I don't know, go figure out what you like to do. Follow that passion. Yeah. So connect with Tiffany. She's amazing. As you can tell through this episode, I never have an idea of where conversations were going to go. And I have loved every minute of this conversation, from the depth of emotion to navigating. Hey, we all have to at some point figure out, not what does everybody else want for me, but what do I want for me? Mm. Not because we're selfish, but because ultimately we're the ones that have the power and we deserve that for ourselves, is to make choices based on what we want. So thank you for sharing your story and your morning with us.
Yeah, Christina, you're a beautiful human. And I, you know, I think I told you this, but shortly after we had our first conversation, and we were using Messenger just to follow up. And I remember, so one of the things that you do that I'm learning to do is to voice record versus, you know, type out the message. And I remember thinking, like, even her voice makes me smile. You know, there's an energy about you that is uplifting and inspiring and supportive. And again, just it feels both vulnerable and strong at the same time, right? Those they live together. But I really want to say I'm so grateful that we cross paths and that we're in each other's lives.
1,000,000%. Thank you so much for sharing that and creating me in that light. This has been amazing. I can't wait to get it out so more people can listen and learn from you as well. And this is our last reminder to everybody else to keep on walking towards fear.